Hi, I'm Elvis Mitchell. Welcome to a special pledge drive edition of The Treatment. My guest today is the star of Tom Ford's film A Single Man, Colin Firth. He's also been in some Joseph Conrad, to Helen Fielding, but he's done some original things too. In fact, one of my favorite movies of his, Apartment Zero, relates to his new film in some ways, the adaptation of Christopher Isherwood's A Single Man. First of all, Colin, thanks so much for being here.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
The reason I was reminded of Apartment Zero when I saw A Single Man is they're both pieces about guys who are going through extraordinarily tragic circumstances and are forced to recognize some parts of themselves that they hadn't recognized before because of another man in both cases.
It's interesting. It hadn't occurred to me. Apartment Zero was a film which got under my skin. And they're both men who are living in isolation. And come to think of it, they're both men who seem to be trying to defend themselves against the world with a kind of external fastidiousness. I mean, Apartment Zero is not set in the past, but Adrian sets himself very much in the past. He would love to be Cary Grant or Montgomery Clift or one of the pictures he has hanging on his wall. There's something in common just in terms of the universe that these men create for themselves.
There have been so many adaptations and a tragic cast to many of them.
Of
and the characters that you played.
You know, I don't think I've had more than my share of loss or grief in my life. And maybe there's something to do with disposition or some way I view the world. I remember years ago, a fellow actor asking me, I think almost within reference to the iconic mime masks of the smiling face and the sad face, which is your primary impulse? As if all actors would probably err one way or the other. Is it to make people laugh or to make them cry? I think we both, without hesitation, said, cry. This is when I was about 25 years old, and I'd never been cast in a comedy. And it wasn't until I was in my mid-30s, actually, that I think it started to happen. I remember thinking around that age, will I ever cast in a comedy? And cut to 10 years later, of course, and, you know, I've got people writing things about me saying, you know, we're not used to seeing him in anything other than a romantic comedy. So, you know, the fact remains that I think I'm much more engaged with the stories that make the heart ache than the stories that lighten the soul.
I almost wondered if you felt like you had to find yourself as an actor to be comfortable in doing comedy. Because I do think it's almost everyone has said that comedy is a more difficult thing to do.
Yes, I don't think I've ever felt entirely comfortable doing comedy.
Really?
Not really. And often even when I've been in a comedy, I haven't been, you know, all sorts of different comic skills and facets to the people who have comic skills. And, you know, there's the Buster Keaton character who never smiles or twinkles. There's the loquacious comic creature, the witty one. There's the, you know, the Oscar Wilde, Wildean, you know, Noel Coward figures who are masters of the bon mot. And then there are the Stooges. And I think in some ways that's been where I've been put on the whole. I've often been the straight guy. You know, when I say Stooge, I don't mean, you know, the pratfalling Stooge necessarily.
But the straight man, who's the butt of the joke to some extent.
Yeah, I'm the guy, yeah, the joke's on me rather than the man who, you know, espouses the wit. It's not been an uncomfortable position, but it's not been always the most inspiring place to be. I think comedy, whatever kind of comedy you're doing, whether you're playing it straight or not, and I'm not dismissing the art of playing it straight. I think there's something, you know, the people who do it well, I admire enormously. The margin of error is minute. It's a high wire act. I find it with drama, it's broader. You can take risks which can pay off in all sorts of directions. Comedy, if you miss by a millimeter, you've missed altogether. I think the people who do it best, I've watched actors trying to master it on film, and, you know, film is catching lightning in a bottle. It's got to happen while that camera is rolling. In order to be in the state where that kind of spontaneity is possible, in the right moment, when the camera is rolling, and there are no focus problems, and there are no lighting problems, and the Sandman is doing it, doing his job properly, and there are no planes going over, and you get your timing right in that moment, then you've nailed it. That is very, very unusual. the time you nail it and someone says, no, I'm sorry, we're going to have to go again. A truck went by or, the camera, there was a shake on the camera. And you try capturing that again. And I've seen actors go to the monitor and check and say, no, the timing was a millisecond too late or a millisecond too early. We've got to do it again. And in the end, spontaneity gets replaced by obsessive repetition. And you don't really have time for excessive repetition on a film. You can squander it on trying to get one line right, and then you leave no time for the stuff you've got to do for the rest of the day. That's the nature of comedy on film, I think. With drama, I don't want to be reductive about it, but I find that there's more freedom than that. You can cry a little bit more, a little bit less. The emotion can be a little bit more demonstrated or a little bit more restrained, and it could work either way. It's not necessarily as dependent on this minute area of, of precision.
You play characters, we can always talk about your protagonist of Single Man, who, had you moved to a millimeter to the left or right, could be an object of ridicule. He could be kind of ridiculous because of this rigidity in which he addresses the world.
Possibly. Although I felt free.
Did you?
In doing it, yeah. The fact that the character is so circumscribed and so fastidious didn't necessarily mean that I felt that way as an actor. Quite to the contrary, I knew what his mask consisted of, and I knew how dependent he was on that. But I think his emotional world, which I was invited to inhabit, was one that was pretty wild and chaotic. I think that's what made the character so interesting to me. I think that
the extent to which he was attempting to tamp down that world.
Yes. I think that the cufflinks and the tie-pin and the suit and the product in his hair and the shined shoes are all instruments against chaos. I think that they are signs of desperation. And I think there have been people who watch this film and think they're signs of Tom Ford wanting to flaunt his visual sense. But that's not what's going on. I mean, just subjectively speaking and being there, all those elements were critical to me in informing what was going on inside George. I mean, the fact that he wakes up in a state of almost hysterical despair and bothers to put himself together that way already told a story to me. You know, that he had to hang on by his fingernails until he made it to the end of that day when the fatal decision comes. He just has to get to that point. And it's not just a weapon against desperation or inner chaos. I think it's also a weapon against the outer beauty of life, which keeps assaulting him and trying to encroach and trying to call him back to the will to live. And that's a very interesting conflict that takes place in a script which, on first reading, doesn't seem to have a plot. You know, this is a man who starts off in one state with a complete commitment to give life up altogether. And everything that happens to him is a challenge to that. And it's a very, very difficult thing to pull off with elan. And I think that Tom has done an extraordinary job in orchestrating that. And each one of these gorgeous images we see are not just pieces of style. They are conflicts.
No, and specifically, because we talked about this when Tom was here a few weeks ago, I thought an imposition of that character's will. I mean, it's probably one of the most subjective films of all time, because I assume that this whole thing is, we're seeing it through his eyes and the way he's ordered the world, which is why it looks like that. It's his point of view being exercised throughout the film.
That's right. It's his point of view being exercised throughout the film, but he's not indulging those images. He might seem to for a moment, but each one of those experiences becomes a challenge to his decision. It makes it more difficult for him to see it through. I don't think he necessarily knows that's what's happening each time. Whether it's his secretary when he arrives at college and he smells her perfume and realizes how beautiful she looks with her hair up, he absolutely inhabits that moment because it's probably the last time he will ever see her. Maybe it'll be the last time he ever sees a woman with her hair up. Maybe it'll be the last time he ever smells Arpège, the perfume, maybe. And so these things have a resonance and a power that they've never had before, because he's never looked at things knowingly for the last time before in his life. This time they become so powerful that they start to endow life with a texture it's never had. And I don't think he thinks at that moment, maybe I can't go through with my decision. Life's beginning to get richer by the minute. But I think cumulatively, by the end of the day, these things have conspired to make it harder and harder for him to actually give up on life.
But that orderliness that we're talking about leads to a scene that's both tragic and comic, the suicide attempt. It's that insane obsessiveness of getting all the details right, but then basically asking those questions, well, what kind of mess I'm going to leave, literally, if I do this?
And actually, I think one of the things that is appealing to me about George is that he is relentlessly polite and considerate. And I think there's something very touching.
Well, except to the kids next door.
Well, that's quite right. And I think he relishes tormenting that family. I think that's just, he's just giving the finger to the suburbs, basically, and to suburban life. And I think I can quite well understand it. You know, there was something that was particularly poignant, because when we were filming this, the day actually that we filmed the scene where George gets the phone call with the news of his lover's death, and then told that, no, you can't come to the funeral because it's family only. That was the day Prop 8 was passed in California. And you think, well, you know, we can patronize the past if we like and pity those poor unenlightened people from 1962, but we've just done something so retrograde here that I don't think we're really in a position to look down from a great height. And I remember coming to work that afternoon, because we shot mostly at night, and there were all these families out, you know, these waspish, perfect suburban families who were just like the Strunks, with their kids, with placards in favor of Prop 8. And you just sort of think, well, what is this? You know, smile and honk for discrimination, you know. And I thought, my God, you know, in some areas we have not moved on in any way. I mean, that's not the focus of our story. But
yes, it gives it certainly extra resonance, does it not?
It gives it extra resonance, and I think it does something. It goes some way to explain George's attitude to his neighbors, anyway. But then again, that little girl who lives across the street is the girl who appears in the bank as something sort of hyper-real. She's not the neighbor across the street anymore. She's the last child he'll ever see. And as such, you know, there's this extraordinary, vibrant, melancholic fascination with her. I mean, he's rendered speechless by the sight of her. Even though she's saying these terrible things, you know, my father thinks you should go in the Colosseum, and, you know, he says you're light in your loafers, and George, he's just absolutely fixated by how beautiful a child can be.
Wow, I'm almost speechless. Colin, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.